Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Kurt Wooker Jr., and this is the Coin Geek Weekly live stream. Thank you for joining us. As you know, we do these shows weekly for about 3 years now. We do them every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it is the staple of my week. It's one of my favorite things to do. It is actually what I went to college for and everything. I've been broadcasting for 20 years. Started my first show in 2003. We're going to talk about all the drama that's going on in the space today. So I normally like to have a lot of fun with you guys. You know, we have running gags and I like to goof around with Alex Moon and my friends here as I really think of all of you. But today we're gonna keep it professional. I'm not going to be goofing around because I think some of this stuff needs to be addressed. So if you're watching, please share across social media. Let the world know that we are live. And we will be taking live questions from what I normally call the troll box, but we'll call it the chat box today because we're keeping it classy. But whatever your questions are, I don't care how spicy, how juicy, if you can get it past our delightful executive producer, Mr. Moon, I'll take it on. I'm not afraid of anything. I have always said, any debate, any person, any time, and I don't need preparation. If it's about Bitcoin or a couple of other things, I'll take you on a moment's notice. So give me some bangers. I'm sure we've got a lot of friends, a lot of neutrals, and probably a handful of enemies watching the show today too. So hi to everybody. Please like, subscribe, hit the alert bell, all of that stuff. It would be a delight. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on. Everything I'm going to bring up is public. When all this stuff started to break Friday, Saturday, it was, you know, oh my God, what's going on? There was a million questions floating around, but now lots of stuff has been made public. Enchain has put out two official press releases that cover this just really summarily, really simple, short. And explain what's going on from the point of view of Enchain. Obviously, there's a deep conflict in the information coming from the former CEO, Mr. Kristen Åger Hansen, who I'm probably going to call Åger Hansen because I'm from Chicago and that's how that name looks to me. So as I talk about it, it's going to come out that way. But go ahead and read it. A lot of the emails and stuff that have been made public, all of that stuff, you know, some of it's been verified by the people saying it. Other things are just wild accusations that are flying around. And I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, like it is with most things. This fairway brief that Mr. Åger Hansen has been hinting at has not published yet, but he's pumping it like a movie script, which is kind of his line on stuff. So, but before I talk all about that, I want to talk a little bit about myself. I promise I'm not going to make the whole show about myself, but to anybody that doesn't watch the show frequently, or you've only seen pictures of me being a meme, or you've only read my name from folks like Artie Fanbelt, or you know, some of our friends here on the show that like to criticize me, I just want to tell my story really briefly and explain exactly what my relationship is to you know, what is perceived as the BSV empire. So I'm just a guy. I got into Bitcoin 10 years ago. I was a entrepreneur, lived in Chicago, and made a lot of friends in libertarian circles. I was a big advocate for sort of end the Fed, sound money stuff. A guy offered to pay me in Bitcoins in late 2012, and I said yes. And that's how my journey started in Bitcoin. About 6 months later, my brother got a job offer to also be paid in Bitcoin by a podcaster, YouTuber at the time named Adam Kokesh, who had a really big YouTube channel and offered to pay my brother in Bitcoin. So when I heard that, I said, okay, I got to go down this rabbit hole, got to figure out what I'm going to do. For me, I looked at it and said, I want to be involved in infrastructure because Bitcoin is essentially an infrastructure project. And until you get the infrastructure right, then it can't really be the sound money that I really desired for it to be. So I went down the white paper rabbit hole and all that stuff. I got into GPU mining at the worst possible time to get into GPU mining. So by the time I got my rigs set up, difficulty had gone up by an absurd amount. And I came to realize sometime in the future that that was because ASICs hit the market and I was new. So difficulty went way up and I didn't do very well at mining at first. Try to repurpose my stuff to mine Ethereum and my GPUs, which were sort of Bitcoin optimized at the time, weren't particularly good at mining ETH either, but stuck to it. Finally figured out how to make a little bit of money doing GPU mining in like 2015 and 16. Went into the crypto sort of rabbit hole stuff because Bitcoin was complicated and crypto was all kind of new and interesting. But I was always very interested in what Bitcoin was, what it meant, what it was for. And specifically, I was very interested in tokens and other utility related to real commerce. And that informed my view and brought me into the what became the big blocker camp. At the time, it was kind of how everybody talked about Bitcoin. You know, it was for payments. Like it was the era when, you know, a local hot dog stand might add a, hey, pay with Bitcoin sticker and that kind of thing. But come 2016, 17, the scaling war had gotten huge. I was working for Bitcoin.com as a sort of a contractor at the time. I was doing local meetups. I was hosting like the Chicago Big Blocker meetup. It became the Bitcoin Cash meetup. It then became the Big Blocker meetup again after the 2018 hash war. But I was actually in discussion to host a show on the Bitcoin.com network when BCH and BSV split from each other. So I was a fan of Roger and really, really bummed out to see BCH and BSV split. When that happened, I just kind of backed off. I said, hey guys, I can't host a Bitcoin.com event anymore. I'm a fan of BSV. I like the SV roadmap. And stayed independent till late 2019, 20. At some point, I think it was late 2019, I did a podcast where I debated Peter McCormick about BSV versus BTC, and then my spotlight got quite a bit bigger. Started having people from CoinGeek ask if I would like to participate, asked if I would do a show, asked if I'd submit articles, that kind of thing. Kind of said no for a while. I wasn't real interested in working with anyone in particular at the time, but I went to the 2020 CoinGeek conference in London. Caught COVID for the first time and came home and said, you know what, that's fine. I think at that point I had maybe submitted an article or two, but said, sure, you know what, I'll do a couple articles. You can pay me to do freelance writing. And after I met everybody, I just was really pumped. I really loved that vision. The 2020 BSV ecosystem was just jaw-dropping. It was inspiring. I remember Steve Shatters congratulating his whole team for the release of the Genesis update, and just all the businesses, all the amazing things. I was so pumped for BSV at that point and said, you know what, that's cool. A few months later, started doing this show. It's always been on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Joshua Hensley actually deserves a little bit of credit for getting me to do the show live. That was his idea. And Alex Moon has been my buddy since episode 2, been the producer here to make this all happen. I do not officially represent CoinGeek. I don't work for CoinGeek. I don't get a W-2. They don't give me health insurance. I don't get any benefits. They pay me if I submit articles and if I do my show here. That is the extent of our relationship. Outside of us being friends, I really like the people that I get to work with, but I'm a contractor. So I don't ever speak directly for CoinGeek. I do not speak for Enchain. I do not speak for Bitcoin Association. I don't speak for Craig or Calvin or their PR teams or anybody else that is involved in any of this stuff. Frankly, I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear, I don't even talk to Craig or Calvin hardly at all. I very specifically keep Craig and Calvin at arm's length for the sake of my objectivity. I know that I agree with their vision of Bitcoin. And so as not to get myself into, you know, cahoots, I guess, I just keep it professional. I don't DM Craig. I don't call Craig. I have his number. I can, but I keep it at arm's length because I want to have an objective view of the economy as an independent person. And so I just want to clarify for everybody. This is broadcast on CoinGeek's channels, and I'm clarifying my relationship. So that's where I am. For me, I see myself as a Bitcoiner. I always thought that Bitcoin would be the most valuable if it was the most useful, if it could actually disrupt the real world, if it could make anybody's lives better just by its existence and make it better in ways that can't be done any other way, that it would be valuable. That would be the thing that made it valuable, is the fact that it's the more efficient hammer, or it's the more efficient plumbing, or it's the more efficient money. It's more efficient than Visa. It's more efficient than PayPal, or all these things. And ultimately, I believed and still believe that this will suss itself out over time, but it's a long battle. It's already been a long battle, and I think it will continue to be. So I just want to clarify how much I hate this drama. I'm here for the tech. I am a tech futurist. I think it's awesome. I still work in infrastructure. I am the founder of a mining pool. We've invented all kinds of technology that is used on BSV, and I love it. It is the thing that wakes me up in the morning. I am excited about Bitcoin. I see myself as someone who works for Bitcoin specifically. And so when we start talking about personalities, like is Craig autistic or is he a narcissist? Is Calvin, you know, some kind of creepy guy that just lives in the islands? Is he some kind of globalist billionaire, reptilian guy? Was Stephen Matthews lying to Calvin in order to make all this like all this stuff? Like, or is Kristen Ager Hansen a plant from COPA? Or, you know, like who works for Mark Zuckerberg? Like all of this stuff. Like, I hate that conversation. And the reason I hate that conversation is because simple people spend their time talking about people. I don't care about the relationships. I don't care what they think or believe. I don't care where they go to church. I don't care where they get their groceries. Doesn't matter to me. If we agree about Bitcoin, if the center of our relationship is about the economics and it's about the businesses that we can help facilitate together, then I'm interested in our relationship in so much as it drives that forward. And none of it matters to me otherwise. So when we spend 5 days, like this massive news cycle with everybody listening to the rantings of the former CEO, and accusations back and forth, and Twitter wars, my goodness, it makes me tired. I don't love it. I think it's a problem for Bitcoin. I think it's a problem for all of us. And I think it's a thing that makes us take a step back and say, hey, why are we wasting our time on people? So I'm going to take a breath and take a sip of water. We're going to cut to a break real quick, and we're going to start to get into a little bit what's going on. We'll talk about the Enchain stuff. We'll talk about Kristen Ager Hansen, what the relationship stuff is. And I will take your questions after I get through a list of things that I've sort of pre-prepared. And then we'll get to your juicy questions. And if we're really lucky, we might be done at the top of the hour, but we'll see. So Mr. Moon, please play the ad. We'll be back in a few.
All the Bitcoin variants, they're not as much on the high horse anymore as they used to be, because, you know, they have their own problems to deal with. And so yes. people are quite open to say, you know what, in the end, this is just technology. It's not about religion. It's not about, you know, some sort of infighting or anything. It's just like, who can actually provide utility and where can I put my use case on?
I had made my mind up, years previous that this chap, Dr. Wright, is the inventor of Bitcoin. So I didn't really waste my time with the crowd that were somehow rebelling against him. Almost felt like they were rebelling against their own father or something like that. You know, just like that was their mindset. They didn't like the authority figure.
And we're back. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Kristen Ager Hansen, my relationship with him, which is minimal. But so I met him about a year ago digitally. I didn't meet him in person until I met him briefly in London in late May or early June for the London Blockchain Conference. But I covered a little bit of predicate information here. I covered the Kleinman trial. I was at the Kleinman versus Wright trial in Miami every single night of of that trial. I would do a live stream. And so I was doing daily streams for 5 or 6 weeks. I don't remember exactly how long it went. It was supposed to end around Thanksgiving and then went another 2 weeks. It was 43 days. Thank you, Alex. it was a lot of work. I was exhausted, and but it was so interesting. It was the juiciest thing in the Bitcoin space, because it had been talked about for like 5 or 6 years at that point. All of this is Craig Satoshi kind of stuff, really centered around the Climan trial. And so I got to know casually, but got to know Kyle Roche and Val Friedman, both a little bit. Like, we'd eat lunch 50 feet away from each other every day. Got to the point where we were cordial, you know, we'd shake their hands in the morning, like say hello, a little bit of small talk, that kind of thing. But while I came to really actually like Val Friedman as a person, I never really liked Kyle Roche. I didn't like his energy. And he struck me as sort of the meme of a seedy attorney, essentially. But that was just kind of a gut feeling thing. There was nothing, you know, other than red flags, there was nothing that really stuck out as like, okay, well, he's a young trial attorney trying to make a name for himself. So of course he's going to be a little weird. But trial ended, kind of went away. It was off my radar. It was a landmark thing in my career too. Lots of people watched my stuff, and I was pretty proud of it. And then all of a sudden, this stuff started leaking from CryptoLeaks. And there was this Christian Ager Hansen guy who had allegedly been involved I think it was Kyle Roche, actually, that said that he was taped by Christian Ager Hansen, who was a name that I didn't know. And I got connected with him quickly because I wanted to get his side of the story. He had been kind of outed as maybe this guy that was involved in this corruption. And pretty quickly, I think it was either the day before I did the show, or maybe it was the very day we met, we had him on the show. But I didn't really have any background information on him at all, and just wanted to hear him out. And if you rewatch that interview, it's largely him talking. I ask a few pretty basic questions, but I just let him talk. I wanted to hear his side of the story, and I found it really compelling, because it just kind of confirmed some of my experiences with that person, with Kyle Roche. And so that was fascinating. And he popped back on my show maybe, I don't know, 3 weeks later or something. It was some relatively short time later, because Kyle had been forced to step down. It got juicier, basically. And Kyle, I don't want to say lost everything, but it was a big fall from grace for Kyle Roche. And so we had Kristen on again to just kind of go over, like, man, what a bunch of fallout, huh? And but other than that, I never really talked to him. I always kept him at arm's length. I don't really talk to anybody at Enchain. I don't have a reason to. I occasionally would speak to him. He offered a couple times for me to come to London or meet him in Miami if he was in, or if I was going to be in one place, or if he was going to be in another place, because I live in South Florida. And it just kind of never worked out for various reasons. But again, I kept him at arm's length, and I had heard some of the rumors of his negotiating tactics. So people would frequently say, and you can hear some of this on the spaces that have been recorded that Kristen has been frequenting over the last week or so, that he sort of has this tactic where he would say, yeah, let's meet for dinner. We'll meet at 5. And then before it gets close, I have to cancel. I'm really, really sorry, but stay till tomorrow. I'll make sure to, we'll make it up to you. And then the next day it's supposed to be at 5, and then he has to push it to like 11. And so then you go meet him somewhere at 11, which for most people is pretty late to have dinner. Then he'll talk to you and you know, make you feel really great and all this stuff, like wine and dine kind of thing. And then not talk about business until you get till like 1 or 2 in the morning. And then all of a sudden the switch flips, and I've heard that he is quite an aggressive negotiator. He starts asking you for 51% of your company and these kind of things. These were the kind of things that Xiaowei Liu was talking about with his company Scrypt, and that Xiaowei wasn't interested. But this is the story that he told, and I've heard this story 4 or 5 times from a few other people too. So when Kristen asked, like, hey, can we go, like, do you want to go get dinner or something? It was always kind of in the back of my head that, no, I don't think so. I got kids. I'm a family man. I'm not really interested in really doing anything that keeps me awake past about 10 p.m. anyways. But you know, for something like that, like I've just got better things to do with my time. So that was one of those things that, you know, just keep him at arm's length. Be respectful. I totally respected his reputation. for all the good stuff that came with it, because he has a pretty impressive reputation on top of also having a pretty pretty bizarre and rough reputation in many regards. So if you want to read some of the stuff about a whistleblower against Kristen, you can read articles by a gentleman by the name of Tom Watson, who was employed by Kristen for a time. Again, it's a little bit of he said, she said, but Tom's stuff is pretty compelling too about how Kristen runs a company, conducts himself. So he also has a very long history of just kind of being a corporate raider. And I say that respectfully. I'm a fan of the movie Wall Street, but I don't exactly want Gordon Gekko at my dinner table. so it's just, it's one of those things. It's a style. Again, I respect him for it as much as one can, but it's also, you know, not the kind of business I'm interested in doing. So anyways, he's been on this social media tour now after this exit from Enchain. So according to Calvin and you know, the little bit of documentation that I've seen, he was summarily dismissed for something that the board didn't like to, out of Kristen. Kristen is out there saying, no, he left and is filing this the fairway brief. And he's a whistleblower. He's looking for whistleblower protection because there's this massive breach of fiduciary duty and all these other things going on at Enchain. But I find it really interesting because, you know, I look at the information and Calvin was pretty quick to say, here's what's true, here's what's not. Seems very simple. And ultimately has been pretty low drama. And Kristen seems to be going at it. He's sounds very upset on these spaces. But I've said a couple of times now, it kind of reminds me of a breakup where you know, he's the boyfriend who broke up with his girlfriend who he was crazy about for the last year, like everything. Oh man, she's the best, she's wonderful, all this stuff. And like the second they break up, it's she was always kind of a, you know, she was kind of a skank, like, you know, he's kind of, and you're like, wait, who's, what, like, wasn't it you that made us hang out with her for the last year? Like, this was mostly unpleasant. And then, you know, and all these things. So now it's Calvin's this bad guy. And, you know, he's bringing up stuff that is sort of your classic, like, okay, here's Calvin sitting by the pool with these girls. And here's, you know, Calvin dancing, holding a cocktail. And, you know, both things, which are ultimately pretty benign. Like, he's not touching the girls and he's not, you know, like all these kind of things. It's like, this has been litigated, both by social media and by, some actual cease and desist orders. So in the case of Calvin with the girls in, I think it was Cuba, if I recall, like he said, hey, like, here's who these people are. Here's a cease and desist. If you want to accuse me of doing something illegal, by all means, like, let's go there. If not, you know, I expect an apology and some other things. And a few publications issued formal apologies for this kind of thing. So this was totally public. And for Kristen to bring it up now, yeah, really feels like, you know, he's trying to dig the knife or, you know, twist the knife a little bit on, like, dude, Kristen, this is four-year-old information. And you were totally fine with it until all of a sudden you kind of had this breakup. And so it just strikes me as a little bit petty. It also makes me feel like, I don't know how employable someone is when you see every time you exit a company, it's, you know, hey, I'm going to leak stuff. I'm going to smear your name through the mud and all that kind of stuff. So I think the interesting lesson here, first of all, Enchain and Calvin specifically has said, we messed up. It was a mistake to hire Kristen. And, you know, Enchain is kind of this fortress of information. I've called it a black hole a couple of times because we don't know what happens at Enchain. Enchain is a conglomeration of a lot of companies. You had like Entrust, Encrypt, all this stuff with Rob McGregor, who was a Vancouver like payments industry guy who got interested in blockchain. And then there's kind of an amalgamation of a bunch of Craig's companies. So it's like De Morgan and some of that stuff rolled into a couple other things that all kind of became what we think of as Enchain today. And so there are like lots of directors and people who we don't know. We don't know who holds the equity at Enchain because they're a private company. And that's just kind of the nature of it. But, you know, moving into this era with Craig and this legal strategy and all this stuff, things that I'm told through the public record, again, that Kristen was supposed to work on with Craig. And now Kristen, you know, has gone full like Craig is fake Toshi and this kind of thing. And, you know, I never loved the legal strategy. I don't like courts in general. I always kind of think of court as a failure to do good business. But But Craig, you know, sees it differently. Craig seems to like litigation. And I should also point out that the Hodelnott trial, the Kleiman trial, and COPPA, which is coming up pretty imminently here, are all people who are suing Craig. So it's not like Craig wanted these necessarily, but he's taken them on. But this whole thing, you know, it's really interesting. And I think the timing is a little bit interesting. I don't want to get into conspiracy theory, but I think the stuff with Kristen, he knows that some of this stuff hurts. He knows that some of it hurts personally. And you know, just, I don't like it. Kind of bums me out. So, however, you know, we've seen proof of work as the solution. So if you just go back and read the white paper, we're going to talk about solving the Byzantine generals problem. We have a lot of Byzantine generals out there, which are people that are squawking. So this would include your Anon accounts. So really, this whole thing is kind of unfolding on Twitter. So we're sort of seeing a lot of noise. And Satoshi Nakamoto gave us a tool to figure out what the truth is amid the noise. And that thing is proof of work. Now, proof of work is a Bitcoin version of a principle that occurs in the wild, right? So you need to look for who has the most to lose in a situation, like who has put the most work in, has the most to lose, and whose reputation is the most on the line in order for them to continue down a path. And, you know, I look at Kristen, who has his own proof of work and a reputation that precedes him. But in the Bitcoin space, you know, I look at guys like Calvin and Craig, and I see guys who have put a lot of their own time and a lot of their own money and a massive chunk of their reputation into making this thing work. Now, whether you like them or not, however you feel about them, it's pretty hard to say that they aren't committed to their vision or their ideas about Bitcoin. Most people don't like their ideas. And so I think that's kind of an important thing to note, is that just in the last 90 days, Calvin put another $500+ million into Enchain as a signal that he cares about this vision going forward for presumably longer than 90 days. And he said as much. I finally took over. I finally have majority control. We're fixing Enchain and it's going forward. And so it's pretty hard to argue with somebody that has already put in 7 or 8 years of time into this experiment in Bitcoin and then comes up with another more than $500 million into it. So that's just it. If you look at the proof of work, you see somebody like Craig, same thing, you know, 3,000 patents, taking all the heat that he has, with everybody calling him a scammer, and there's no money to make across it because the ideas are fundamentally not profitable at this point. They believe they will be profitable in the future, but it's in business. It's not the buy token, get rich. It is something completely different. And so it is, it's a very different thing. And I think it really, I think the best way to look at it is through the lens of proof of work. And so I look at Craig, and we've got this COPPA trial coming up and all this other stuff, and Kristen calling into question Craig's integrity and all these things. Now, it's very, very easy in the blockchain world to look at Craig Wright and say he's a fraud and then get applause from an audience of anonymous people. They will cheer you on. They will call you brave. You know, we've got Peter McCormick, my dear friend, sending hearts over to Kristen Ager Hansen, who is now, you know, virtue signaling to Hodelnott and Peter and all of that. And, you know, that's the kumbaya crowd. That's the crowd that's like, hey man, it's going up forever. Everything's going to be fine and all of that. And I don't know. Doesn't strike me as a costly signal at all. Frankly, the most profitable thing you can do in the blockchain space is be a laser eye person, get popular, get lots of followers, get sponsorships, get paid speaking gigs, get a show on a network where you're sponsored by a bunch of different brands and whatever. But Craig, you know, I look at Craig and I say, okay, the guy spent a lot of his own time, a lot of his own money and, you know, all for what? And so that to me makes it much more trustworthy that he cares about the mission. If he was just saying, hey, I'm Satoshi, and then, you know, not showing up for work, okay, that's one thing. But the man is one of the largest individual patent holders of all time, an IP fortress now that appears to be the thing that is being fought over. We see Kristen and Calvin both kind of talking about the IP. Kristen's talking about BSV as, oh, I still think it's valuable. I'm still, you know, I'm, I maybe I'll still build something here. So it looks like there's an IP battle here. Calvin obviously cares about it. Forbes recently just wrote about, hey, man, this IP really matters. And then you got COPPA. It's the Crypto Open Patent Alliance that wants to sue Craig for all that IP. So something about what's been going on with Craig at Enchain has value. And it's making everybody a little bit untrustworthy. So that stuff's rough. I don't know what the relationship is right now among Stefan and Calvin and Craig and Enchain and all these other things. I know Craig created some kind of new business entity that is now contracting to Enchain. I can think of a few very reasonable reasons why that would be. And I can think of a few conspiracy theories of why this might be some crazy thing going on. But I ultimately don't know, and nobody's going to tell me. So that's kind of where we are with that. But I look at Craig and I see the person who looked like who I always assumed Satoshi Nakamoto would look. It's that vision of Bitcoin for all of the things that Bitcoin was capable of. And people will tell you that's crazy, that Craig doesn't understand Bitcoin, that Craig is trying to undermine it and modify it and, you know, kill off open source developers, all these other things. And it just strikes me as absurd. I see a man who lights up about Bitcoin and then ultimately is working on thousands of things that you can do with it. And he's working on it with his entire life and his entire reputation. And if you follow the proof of work instead of the Sybil attack, it looks like one person is willing to do anything for his love of Bitcoin. And this leads me to essentially why I believe he's Satoshi Nakamoto. I see someone who loves his invention the way a father loves his children. And I also know Craig loves his children. And I see that love of the thing that you can't fake. And so that's kind of where I am about it. This is kind of what's going on. These are my thoughts about it. I'm sure we have lots and lots of questions now. I've not been paying attention to the troll box because I have Mr. Moon, who is vetting all the delightful questions. And I think let's just start bringing them up. I'll start answering the questions as they come. Is Calvin removing financial support for Craig's legal defense? Calvin has said publicly that he's not, that it's taken care of, and that he'll continue to see it through. The email that leaked was a pretty heavy-handed, almost felt a little bit like an ultimatum from Calvin to Craig, basically saying, look, dude, chips are down. This is it. We're in a do or die moment here. A lot of money on the line. If you can sign, just sign, is essentially the summary of what that email is. And I think it shows a couple things. I think it shows that Calvin has been operating under at least some trust with Craig, that there's not some sort of like Craig and Calvin, you know, having this secret, cabal trying to trick the universe and all these other things. Like Calvin and Craig have their own relationship that has its own tensions. And I think that shows a lot of authenticity between the two of them. But it does call into question, hey, has Calvin seen Craig sign? And, you know, like we've seen some of this, right? So, and I think some of this comes down to people being a little unclear about the way the trust is set up or the way that, you know, Craig has explained the way this trust works and key slices and all this kind of thing. Now, if you have a bunch of slices that are separated for security reasons, you generate a key, you use that key and you should destroy the key. I think Craig used the term stomp. He stomped the hard drive, which has now become a meme in and of itself. I don't think it means he physically stomped the drive necessarily, but much the same way you say, well, I burned my keys, is, you know, I'm not going in the backyard and lighting them on fire. You know, you can delete the file and whatever. But anyways. I think it says, or I think it shows that there's a little bit of tension, but ultimately Calvin has said in public that Craig has secured all of the legal funding that he needs and it's fine. Like full steam ahead is essentially the way that I see it. So next question. Moto Fiction. What's your opinion on a possible strategy for Craig to prove how Hal Finney et al. Could not have been Satoshi, making him the only one left? So that's interesting. So Hal has always been a question mark for me. A lot of people love the idea of Hal Finney being Satoshi Nakamoto. And frankly, I love the idea of Hal Finney being Satoshi Nakamoto. If you look into who Hal Finney was, he just seems like a great guy. Like he is family man. Just a guy that is well-liked, well-respected, and all these other things. Unfortunately, if you take more than a surface look at Hal Finney, it doesn't make any sense that Hal Finney would be Satoshi. Not only did Hal very unequivocally say that he's not Satoshi, like on his deathbed, but he also had a lot of disagreements about the implementation of Bitcoin between him and Satoshi, some of which are public that you can just read in plain English. Basically, debates about like race conditions versus cryptographic security. And, you know, Hal Finney advocated for Bitcoin to be much more of a sort of altruistic home compute project, which led Satoshi Nakamoto to use the word libertarian. The only time he ever used the word libertarian was in response to Hal saying, well, no, Bitcoin appeals to libertarians. And he's explaining it's race conditions, it's competition, it's economics, it's not cryptographically secure. So they actually had some pretty deep and fundamental disagreements about the implementation of Bitcoin. And so unless Hal was, you know, some kind of master of sock puppetry and all these other things, which by all means, Hal comes across as a lifelong, very, very sincere person. It just seems very bizarre that that's even possible. And, you know, so as for how Craig may have interfaced with guys like Hal or guys like Dave, some of these other people that, you know, some of which we know were involved in Bitcoin very, very early and other people who were simply theorized, frankly, we don't know. And the fact that, you know, some of this stuff is unclear and that Craig likely spent a very long time trying to destroy any evidence of his creation of Bitcoin. And now it kind of is all coming back. And now it's, you know, very much in his interest to prove that he is Satoshi. Like that's a, it's a pretty rough person or rough thing for a person to go through when he's actually an expert in destroying data. So before all this Bitcoin stuff, Craig was actually famous for things like the drive wipe fallacy and you know, helping create standards about deleting or recreating data. He's a digital forensics expert, published multiple times. And, you know, so Craig, if he was trying to get rid of any evidence he's Satoshi, he would have been quite good at getting rid of that evidence. And now being asked to bring up evidence to prove he's Satoshi, clearly that's become quite a bit more difficult in light of those things. But this is why he has actually tried to rely on human evidence as part of the thing. Now, unfortunately, Hal is dead, Dave is dead, and a lot of the people that he would have worked with quite closely are gone. Gavin Andreessen has basically been completely bullied out of the picture as somebody worth talking to. And, you know, it's hard to know. And it's a complicated thing, but we should expect it to be complicated. Like even the name Satoshi Nakamoto coming out as a pseudonym tells us there's something to hide and something is hidden. And we shouldn't expect it to be easy to show because, well, that's the nature of it. And so all that to say, I don't know. Next question, please. Do COPPA need to prove that Craig is not Satoshi for them to win? So this actually just recently changed. Initially, the answer was yes, which is really great for Craig, or would have been. It's really, really, really hard to legally prove a negative. It's impossible in rhetoric or, you know, whatever the science is of philosophy to prove a negative. But in a court of law, it's also among the most difficult things to do, to prove that something didn't happen or that you are not a person or that a thing did not exist. However, as this case, COPPA has now been kind of rebundled into a predicate for all of this other litigation, something that Craig has agreed to, by the way, he could have fought this, but he did not fight it. They don't exactly have to prove that he isn't Satoshi. It's more about basically likelihoods and then the nature of the evidence and then bringing it forward and just having it be a decision. And then that decision is now specifically set up to apply to these other cases. And there's a few more. There's three or four other cases out there that need to be litigated based on this evidence. But I think there's an interesting signal there. You know, Craig comes across as very confident some days, and then also, you know, he's got a big attitude, and sometimes things come across as like, man, what is going on? But I think the fact that Craig agreed to this without argument, like, it's not in his best interest to lose this, and he seems to be unequivocal about going forward with it. So I don't know what he knows that we don't know or whatever, but guy's got a hell of a stare down. So next question, please. Does Calvin have children? So I've not met his children, and he mentions his children in that email that has leaked, and he confirmed that email was real. So presumably he has kids. I don't know. Calvin, interesting thing about Calvin, people think of him as the like MTV Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous kind of guy that he was sort of 20 years ago. And I've always sort of had this theory that was nothing but like a caricature, that he kind of wanted to sort of gin himself up as like a Richard Branson type. But if you meet Calvin in person or talk to him, he's always very brief. And which actually led me to believe when that email leaked, I was like, if that's Calvin, that is the single longest email that man has ever written. Because Calvin is like a one-line guy, even in person. It's just very like, hey, good to see you. Like quick handshake. He's just got this very, I don't even know what the vibe would be. A little bit like, you know, hey, I'm in charge of this, but, you know, kind of keep me out of it. I'm gonna kind of observe from 50 feet away. And that's just the way he is about everything. But he comes across as like shy might be the right word, except when he's sort of playing that character, the sort of Playboy CEO character that people might remember from like MTV Cribs. So, all that to say, when people say, hey, what, you know, does Calvin have kids? Does Calvin have family? Does Calvin have a house in this place or another? Like the answer is if he does, he doesn't talk about it because he wouldn't talk about it because he really, really appreciates his privacy and not in a trivial way. Like he's just genuinely a private guy. And it's something I respect about him is that he's decisive, but he's brief. And then he goes off and does whatever it is he does in private. And I don't blame him one bit for wanting to keep his life pretty private. So there's that. Next question. From Connor Murray. Given Kristen Ager Hansen's history of hostile takeovers and the numerous negative opinions of him expressed by nearly everyone that interacted with him, why was he tolerated for so long? I mean, he was the CEO for like 10 months, right? Or something like that. Less than a year. I think with anybody, you know, you have a honeymoon period that lasts for a certain amount of time. And then you have this sort of breakup. I'm gonna use another boyfriend, girlfriend analogy here. Like you meet somebody, it's exciting for a while. You spend a lot of time, you know, lovey-dovey, staring in each other's eyes. You go on a date night 3 days a week. Everything's great. Like you never turn the TV on because you just love talking to them or doing whatever else it is that new people like to do when they first meet. But you know, then all of a sudden it's you start to realize like, you know what? I don't like the way they cook or laugh, or I don't like the way that they, you know, do this, or they drive like a jerk, or they, you know, like eccentricities. So then all of a sudden, like you see cracks form. Well, and then you get to the point where how much have they integrated into your life when it comes time for the breakup? And that gets really, really difficult. Breakups are hard, man. There's a lot of people that just simply can't break up. I've been in relationships too long because I'm a little bit like, yeah, man, like we got a vacation planned with our group of friends 3 months from now, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, well, I would break up today, but you know, I got these tickets like that, you know, so it's always stuff like that. So it could just be really, really simple, practical stuff. Now it's not a perfect analogy because this is business, right? But ultimately when somebody is the CEO and he has his own management team at the company that you manage, you know, there's a lot of logistics involved in that. It's, you know, he doesn't work in the mail room. He was the CEO. So 10 months, like I'm picturing like an era where, all right, we like this guy, let's give him a shot. And then you get an era where it's like, okay, I do like this, but I don't like that. And then all of a sudden the relationship sort of teeters into a 50-50, like, okay, I'm really starting to not like the cost benefit analysis of this guy long-term. And then you've also got, you know, when a guy's in the CEO's office and maybe there's some other nonsense going on, then you get that period where you're trying to like lock down access to files and, you know, stuff. Like you start to have like a remediation plan for, okay, how do we fire this guy without giving him the opportunity to leak a bunch of private information or go rogue in much the ways that we've seen now. So all in like something like 10 months, it seems pretty reasonable to me when you got a new CEO and he becomes your former CEO inside of a year. That actually is pretty damn fast the way I see it. So that's my thoughts on it. Next one. Excuse me. You're not supposed to slurp into a microphone. I was wondering how Kristen managed to get the CEO position in the first place. Was it because he threw Kyle Roche under the bus? I mean, the kip of the geezer. Love it. You know, I don't really know. I don't know what goes on in the background on stuff like this. It's the classic Viking introduction. If you know a little bit about Viking history, this is one of those things where, you know, you show up with the head of your enemy and walk into the tribe and say, "Hey, we could be friends." It's a pretty compelling way to make an introduction, but ultimately, I have no idea. Like I've said earlier, Enchain is a pretty complicated business. It's a lot of different companies rolled into each other. And so I always kind of question, given that I don't know who holds equity in this company, you know, maybe Kristen's been involved a little longer than we know. Like, you know, we don't know. Because when you have lots of groups of people that are all kind of investors, it might be one of those things where, you know, you see, I talk about Digital Currency Group a lot. I think a lot of people work at a company like, you know, Coinbase or Kraken, and they don't even necessarily know who Digital Currency Group is, but they're in your pocket. And so, you know, some of these things we may never know because, again, they're a private company and it's not really anybody's business, but we all love gossip. All I know, like the only things I know is that when he was appointed, it seemed like they had a relationship for a few months. And I'm guessing it's the, hey, I gave you Kyle Roche. Like, I can give you a whole lot more. He talks a good game, and he does genuinely talk a good game. I'll give him that. He's got a hell of a Rolodex, and he's a pretty good pitch man. I don't know. It's just he made a deal, and he's pretty good at making those deals too. So good on him for that. You know, I've never said that he isn't talented at what he does. So could just be that good negotiator. Next question. I find it strange that Mr. Agar Hansen has kept making noise around the topic when he already denounced the situation, explained why he left or was let go. Why do you think that is? What is his end goal? You know, he's a super passionate guy. Like, I've got to see him in person on stage. Like, if you watch, I don't know if it's in the clip that you can view from the London blockchain, but he kind of jogs out. He's got a big spring in his step. He jumps on a stage, and he's, I don't know how old he is. He's, you know, more than middle-aged. But he's in good shape. He's got a lot of energy. He's super passionate. Alex Moon, 61. Thank you. So, you know, that's a guy nearing retirement. Some people at 61 are like, you know, unable to function. Kristen Agar Hansen, he's got a lot of mojo. He's going, man. So he's passionate. When you take a passionate person for everything that's great about a passionate person, well, you got to deal with the negatives. But a passionate person is also going to be very, very passionately upset and negative and all that other stuff when things start to not go their way. You know, I'm not a psychologist here. I'm not going to talk about personality disorders or any of that stuff because it's going to be me mostly speaking on my ass. But, you know, you see it. It's your friend that was always wild in a great time. Like, when he starts getting toxic, well, that's unpleasant when it goes the other direction. It's the kind of guy that is like, man, he pushed that all way too far and I didn't want to go to the hospital or all this other stuff. Like, I think it just kind of comes with the territory. You get really hot, you also get really cold, and it's to be expected a little bit. Next one. Steve Bailey. Do you think it was wise for Calvin to put this sort of stuff in an email rather than waiting to talk face-to-face? Is this potentially damning info will now be used in the COPPA case? I don't know. Calvin is not one who hangs out at the office. So as the you know, as the guy who's in charge of quite a lot of things, spends a lot of his time, I think he even said he wrote the email from Spain. He was essentially on vacation. Now, Calvin does this. He sort of floats around the world. He checks on his empire and goes to dinner, basically. So Calvin is not like an operational guy with his fingers and everything on a daily basis. And we shouldn't expect him to be. Again, he's a man in his you know, younger 60s, and he's got a long career behind him. And he's got a lot of good lieutenants in place. That's something I can vouch for from having seen the way, you know, the inside of CoinGeek and some of these other things, is the people that he puts in charge are eminently capable, competent people as a rule. And so he doesn't generally need to have his fingers in everything. But if something was urgent, you know, it's kind of the rule. I'm a cybersecurity guy by you know, background. And one of the rules is, you know, don't write it unless you want it to be read someday by everybody. And so it's something to consider, but ultimately, I mean, it's his decision. It kind of is what it is. So he may or may not regret it at this point. Next one. James. Do you think Kristen Ager Hansen was attempting to take over Enchain's IP? However, this was thwarted after Calvin bought the majority stake, and then Kristen Ager Hansen reverted to sabotage. It's an interesting theory. You know, a lot of people would say, and in fact, a lot of people have said that the timing of Calvin buying that majority stake in Enchain was confusing. The reason it's confusing is I think everybody basically just presumed that Calvin was the majority shareholder the whole time. You can see the Calvin shaking Calvin meme, the Calvin makes a deal with Calvin, which is hilarious every time I see it. But ultimately, like I said, Enchain, we don't know how many people. I mean, Enchain might have 100 equity holders, might have 1,000 equity holders. We don't actually know. But at some point, Calvin decided, hey, I'm the one who really cares about this thing. And if I'm going to do it right, I need to control more of it than I do. And so that might have been precipitated by something he didn't like about Kristen, or it might have been precipitated by any other benign thing that exists out in the universe. What we do know is that Calvin sees enough value in the IP portfolio and in BSV in general that he put another $500 million plus into doing such a thing. So anything else would be speculation. Again, I don't know. Calvin's certainly not asking me, hey, Kurt, should I spend $500 million on Enchain shares? I don't know. So speculate away. Unfortunately, I don't know, and we'll probably never know. Mr. Moon. Lots of questions here. BitMonkey, could you explain what you know from public information about the negotiating tactics used by Enchain with regards to the recent VC funding, especially the royalty structure mentions 10% royalty? I don't know a whole lot about what goes on at Enchain. I've been critical of Enchain in the past. I think a lot of the way that they manage things, it just strikes me as very weird. It's a little unclear to me what their priorities are in many regards. And I think in a lot of ways, it's probably a big mix of priorities. You know, the various departments, when you have hundreds of people, like you get modules that all kind of have their own culture. So as for how all that works, I don't really know. I know Kristen was big on, I want to control 51% of your equity, and then I'm willing to give you a loan as a convertible note. And then, you know, a bunch of stuff that was very, they're the kind of offers that you make to a company that is like you expect would go bankrupt in a month or 3 months if it wasn't for your money, which makes sense in some regards with these startups in the BSV space. But it's also super insulting when you show up as the guy who's like, hey, I love the ecosystem. I'm going to make this great. We're going to make it a fun and open place to be. And Enchain's going to be an open door. We're going to have these dev workshops and all this stuff. And then you actually meet the guy and he says, give me your company in exchange for debt, please. So it just kind of comes across as like, man, I don't know. But I don't know if that was a pure like Kristen Ager Hansen era tactic. It seems like it would be, but we don't know how Enchain conducts itself otherwise. Because again, other than hearing this from startups who have seen an offer that he's made, you know, Enchain's not out there publishing all their deals. So that's where that's at. Next question, please. So what are the facts about these tampered with court documents? So the way that this stuff works, you know, Craig is not individually going through documents and saying, oh, hey, this one's mine, this one's good. The way this works with court documents is that you would typically take a hard drive and you would get it imaged, which is to mean you basically take a one-to-one copy of the entire hard drive. And then a paralegal, so somebody that works at the attorney's office, then filters by whatever data they're looking for. So if they're looking for, documents from like before 2008 or before like, you know, the published date of the Bitcoin white paper, like what do we have here? Is there any source code? Is there whatever? Or they can filter for all like anything else that you might look for as evidence for anything, whatever the topic is. Now, forgery at that level, I mentioned before, like Craig's career, like if it wasn't for Bitcoin, if Craig never was a Bitcoin guy, like the thing that he would be famous for is like teaching people standards for cyber forensics, like how to properly delete data for safety reasons and compliance reasons and all of that kind of stuff. So when people call him like a really poor forger and serial forger, that just strikes me as two things. Like, how could Craig be both a renowned expert in cyber forensics for compliance and technical security, and then also be like a really, really sloppy forger. Just the, like those two things just don't jive with each other. So either one of those things is false, like objectively false, in which case Craig never worked his whole life. He didn't have a career. He didn't own like six companies in that industry in Australia and all this other stuff, or something else happened. So the option that is an option that people don't talk about a ton is maybe the stuff was tampered with without Craig's knowledge at some point between the Satoshi era, which would be like 2005 or six to 2010 or 12. And then when these images were taken, which is confusing. So ultimately we don't know. Unfortunately, bad data is what it is. And, we don't know. Sometimes these things happen. But like I said, if Craig is Satoshi and is an expert in deleting information and then deleted all the information, destroyed the information that proves he's Satoshi, that puts him in a weird position for proving he's Satoshi now, because, sorry, that stuff's gone. Best case scenario, he finds an old hard drive that he forgot about, gets it properly imaged, and then it becomes, you know, hey, here's a draft of the white paper from a hard drive that hasn't been touched since 2006. Now, all of a sudden, that's a really good smoking gun piece of evidence, but we don't know if that exists. So next question, please. We're definitely going long. I've got like 20 more questions. Thoughts on the email between Calvin and Craig, forwarded to Kristen by Stefan. Does anyone else find the whole thing fishy? That Romain read it like it was meant to be leaked? I don't think so. Seems to me like Calvin is looking at all of this and saying, hey, like signature makes a whole lot of sense right now. And we can relate with this. I don't talk about Craig's legal strategy because it's frankly none of my business. And I kind of don't care. Like, I very much believe Bitcoin is anti-fragile. And if Craig and Calvin and Stefan and Enchain and Tal and everybody else all just decided, you know what, we're done, we're retiring, I think BSV would persist completely. And I think it would be fine because it's anti-fragile, but not everybody would agree with me on that point. As for, I don't know, I just think it's too Machiavellian. I mean, like the culture out there, if you ask most people, what do you think of Craig and Calvin? They'd say they're bumbling frauds, right? So are they bumbling frauds or are they brilliant 5D chess players? And I actually tweeted yesterday, is Kristen Ager Hansen, or how soon until the laser people start to presume that Kristen Ager Hansen is playing 5D chess? He's still on Team Craig and Cal. I don't know. That's it. That's all I got. Next one. What does Calvin Ayer in public, or why does Calvin Ayer in public attack everyone that demands Craig for proof, saying signing means nothing, and in private bashes Craig for not signing? That email is quite new. And frankly, change of heart, I guess. I think that email is from like the last 2 weeks, essentially. So for years, Craig has been very specifically trying to prove that he's Satoshi using standards that he thinks are the most important thing. And if you know anything about the way autistic people function, like they double down and they double down again and they double down again, because they don't make arbitrary decisions. They make very, very calculated decisions based on evidence as they see it. And Calvin, like I said before, he's a little bit like, hands off, I trust you guys, I put good people in charge, this is going to work itself out kind of thing. Well, now, you know, a few years on and who knows how many millions of dollars invested, maybe looking at some of the feedback from this, you know, preliminary stuff going on, looking into COPPA and saying, you know what, this evidence kind of sucks. Like, Craig, if you have a nuclear button, can you please press the nuclear button? Strikes me as Calvin being frustrated. Who knows what else changed between them? I don't know if they're friends. I don't know how often they talk. Do they talk once a day or twice a year? I don't know. but Calvin seemed frustrated. Maybe just plainly had a change of heart about it. Or maybe the nature of the evidence has demanded, like, hey, Craig, you know what? Maybe this is 50-50. Maybe it looks like we could lose this thing. With everything on the line, like, dude, just sign it. Like, that's kind of the vibe that I get. Is it's a little bit like, come on, bro. Like, nobody else has your back the way I got your back. Do it. That's what it looks like to me. Now, as for the last couple of years of, him criticizing people, like, it seems like a change of heart. That's it. Next one. My throat is beginning to get hoarse. So let's, I'll be fine. Alex Favell, what is the most ridiculous piece of evidence that Kristen Ager Hansen has put forward? This is a good question. Should be used on Dark to Light coming soon. The most ridiculous. Well, I think the interesting thing about Kristen right now is that he is both calling Craig fake Toshi, but also he has backpedaled on that, saying like, yeah, but I think he probably was involved or he could be involved, you know, something to that effect. So he's kind of softened his position on that. He's also, you know, talking about like, oh, I still really think BSV is really great technology and, you know, some of this other stuff. So it's a little bit like, and it's just a little chaotic, frankly. And so, you know, I kind of don't know what to make of it. When I look at, I think the weirdest thing for me is he leaked a screenshot that appears to be Craig searching for the file format for the Bitcoin white paper, the LaTeX standard. And to get that information, like, who has access to Craig's search history? So that's one that stands to me, or looks to me like, what's that all about? Because if you know, if I go showing my wife her search history, the question comes back to me like, how did you get my search history? Like, all of a sudden, I'm the suspect here. So that one stood out to me as a little weird. But frankly, all of it seems very almost too theatrical. Like this, the fairway brief, and he's putting up old movie posters and that kind of thing. It just is. I don't know. The whole thing is. Whatever. It's too much. I don't get that way. Next question. Mr. Mason, how do you think Copa guys are feeling right now? Overconfident, perhaps? Good question. I don't know. I mean, when we talk about Copa, we're literally talking about Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey, Michael Saylor, Adam Back, like Blockstream is one of the groups on there who's a funder. And then also guys like Sam Altman and some of these other, you know, so we're talking about like the who's who of Silicon Valley in a lot of ways. And like, I think they're always overconfident. Like they're used to making so much easy money and selling people's data and controlling things. Like I think they look at Craig despite everything and say, I don't know, like this guy, he's not even one of us. Is he even from San Francisco? Like, ha 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 ha. It's just a very sort of Silicon Valley vibe. So no, I'd be willing to bet they're super overconfident, but I don't know. You know, I haven't gone and read this 900 page forensic report or any of this stuff yet. I'm trying to work my way through the stuff that's publicly available, but that's a lot to swallow. Ultimately, I don't know, but yeah, it's in their nature to be overconfident. They literally created a multi-trillion-dollar economy by basically just tricking people into thinking that, like, you know, crypto's the revolution, bro. So they're doing real well for themselves in that regard. And Craig has not exactly been the most investable human being in the last 10 years either. So. I think they look at it and say, what, he's going to beat us? We're the biggest guys in the room. So ultimately, it really is that. It's like you choose Craig Wright, Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, or you go to like crypto casino, Silicon Valley. Like, I don't know. I don't love it. I would think people that are interested in something that's actually revolutionary would be looking more closely at aligning with Craig. So, but that's just me. Next question. What's at stake in the Copa case? Everything. It's literally Craig trying to prove once and for all that he's the guy that wrote the white paper that issued the issued Bitcoin and is the owner of all this stuff on principle. You know, if he fails and, you know, loses and the, like patents and all this stuff ends up making its way over to Copa. I mean, it's in the control. We're talking about guys like Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey. Like these are guys that have basically taken global data and made it a weapon against freedom and humanity. Craig is trying to put this in control of like, you know, nonprofit organizations that will really protect it. It's obvious that he cares about these things. And I think it's pretty obvious that guys like Zuck and Dorsey don't care about that kind of thing. But people will tell me I'm crazy. It's the other way around. We should all trust Jack Dorsey and Michael Saylor. So I don't know. But no, it's a big deal. Copa's a big deal. Next question. Let's assume the court case is won. What's the expected outcome? Do we expect BTC to rebrand or shut down? I could only speculate. I kind of don't care. This stuff is about Craig's legacy. It's about like the history part of it, I think is really interesting. And I think it's important that the history books get this right. But from a commercial standpoint, like what happens to the crypto economy? I would love to see the crypto economy finally flushed away, but it's not just going to go away because a court case decided it's going to go away. Like we also really need to build stuff that people want to do. Like like we need to disrupt the actual economy. That's the thing that starts to make our argument. You know, this is big news inside the crypto space, but outside of us, like any normal person looks at this and thinks we're insane. We are an insane, weird little niche. And I'll tell you what, if people listen to an hour of me talking and an hour of like Greg Maxwell talking, but they're a normal person, like soccer mom taking their kids to, you know, school in the minivan, they're going to think we're the same person. Like that's how similar we are to like 99% of all humanity. So we should set our differences aside a little bit, look each other in the eye occasionally and say, hey, we might really fundamentally disagree about a lot of things, but ultimately we're like this close to each other on so much. So, you know, call that a peace offering, I guess. Next question. If internally they don't believe they can win Copa, what do you think the play is from here? Ultimately, aside from my relationship with Craig, the fact that I like Craig as a person, I would like to see him win. And, you know, I think about like his family and the fallout and all this stuff. Like, I hope Craig wins for his sake. However, again, the commercial aspect is what I care about. I care about Bitcoin being used in real commerce. And that's that's up to us. That is up to us to make work, period. So that's how I see that. Next one. What's a Harvard signing? I have no idea. It could have been a typo. It could have been, you know, the MIT lab. MIT has a cryptocurrency lab. So I don't know. You know, Craig is a student at Harvard. Like I think he's like a satellite student. So maybe he has a relationship there. What I would guess, and this is pure speculation, like they might have a sterile environment where, you know, the people who can't be tricked essentially can watch him do this thing and like sign off on it, notarize it as a third party that's not like, you know, Calvin Ayer or John Matonis or Ian Grigg or whatever. But like, hey, here's, you know, six computer scientists in cryptography. This was done accurately. We certify the fact that this was done in a sterile environment on you know, all this stuff. Craig Wright has the Satoshi keys. Like that could be what, and again, pure speculation. But it could also be a type, like, who knows? I don't know. It's something they clearly know about each other, but I'm not sure. Next one. What's your opinion on what will likely happen to BSV should CSW lose the case? Frankly, I think the idea that BSV sucks has been completely priced in for about the last year. I think anything in the $30 range, like if you're holding BSV right now, I think you're in for the long haul. I don't see it taking a huge dump. Also, if you look into how prices and stuff are impacted across exchanges, it's basically all fake. So, you know, we've pumped this week on all the crazy news that's been going on. Why is that? Like, probably not for any fundamental reason other than some market makers saying, you know what, let's make BSV pump. This is fun. So, you know, what happens fundamentally? I'll tell you what, man. I mean, Calvin's not going anywhere. He's willing to fight for the IP. Like, he just invested $500 million in Enchain because he believes in it, like 2 months ago. So, you know, it's just going to be like, well, it's January. I guess we're packing it up. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, the work that's being done to use Bitcoin in real commerce, like, this is a mission that is going forward forever. So that's how I see it. Next question. Assuming that email from Calvin was real, do you think Craig is able to sign now, lost the keys? And if not, do you see him and Calvin parting ways? You know, again, I don't know what their relationship is. You know, I've kind of always been of the opinion, because I don't know, and frankly, I see this as a chess game. You know, Craig might be able to sign at any time, and the Tulip Trust stuff is, you know, it's all out there as a way to say, oh, here's how I'm keeping this ambiguous. Could be that. Same thing with, you know, all this other business entity stuff. Ultimately, we don't know. We don't know what Craig can or can't do ultimately, right? I tend to think that Craig could have a key generated, but it would be, you know, how many trustees does he have to call? Is it 5? Is it 12? Like, we don't know a lot of those details. But even if Craig, quote unquote, stomped the drive with the key that was generated for the signings for Andreessen and stuff, yeah, it can be generated again. So I tend to think that that's totally possible. Now, if Craig loses by, you know, something that ticks off Calvin, like, no, I mean, the relationship isn't, you know, a perpetual guarantee. Like, they don't have the relationship of like Mother Mary and Jesus Christ. Like, they have a business relationship and they're social, they're friends, but you know, any relationship can be broken by somebody breaking trust or just becoming too frustrated. And ultimately, that's between them. It's private. I don't know. And neither of them are, you know, texting Kurt to ask like, hey, you know, Kurt, can you ask Craig if he still likes me? Or can you ask Calvin if he still likes me? Like, this isn't middle school and I'm not the popular girl on the cheerleading team. So sorry. Next question. Kristen Ager Hansen accuses Craig of fudging or manipulating documents. What specific document or detail that was supposed to have been fudged? Is there anything specific or just vague accusations? Honestly, he probably went and read Arthur Van Pelt's blog, which is itself a pretty thorough takedown of a bunch of particular stuff. And if you take it in the context that he frames it, like, you look at it and say, okay, this is pretty damning. And when you're feeling butthurt about it, it's like I said earlier in the show, it's very, very easy. There is no political capital spent on saying, hey, I think Craig Wright is a fraud and a document forger. So for Kristen to spin that, he knows that hurts. He knows that's the knife that he can twist, and he did. Next question. What shoes did Craig wear to stomp the hard drive? He probably got his military boots. So who knows? I don't know. I tend to think it was a figurative stomping, but I don't know. It's tap shoes. Next question. Yeah, just red socks. Have you seen how hard his feet are? they're trained feet. Why does the COPPA case have an impact on Enchain's patent portfolio? Their ideas, novel inventions, methodologies determined in those granted patents are separate from the Satoshi white paper. So why? I agree with you. However, attorneys and furious litigants don't see it that way. Like, when we take some of the richest people in the history of the world, who have gotten very rich by controlling data, you know, they look at someone like Craig and Calvin and say, okay, we have deeper pockets than them. We'll just paper them to death until we win. Could totally happen. Or, you know, push them basically into bankruptcy and then we buy Enchain and then we control them anyways. Like, this could be, you know, who knows? Ultimately, we're dealing with a lot of very powerful, wealthy people that want to control the blockchain space because they see it as the next frontier or ways to make lots and lots of money. And when that's the incentive on the line, why not throw an occasional Hail Mary here? So that's the way I see it. Next one, please. Matthew Giles. Do you think Craig will change his stance on signing as Calvin believes he should, or do you think he will stick to his guns? I have no idea. You know, Craig gets into some very deep philosophical stuff about property rights and identity. Stuff that I agree with. So if you read about Tomonaga Nakamoto, who, if you have read Craig, he says is the reason he used the name Nakamoto in the pseudonym. You know, he's talking about, he's like the Japanese Adam Smith, like talking about property rights and capitalism, essentially. But when you talk to an autistic, like, autistic people don't come to a position lightly, ever, like, that they're not capable of it. So the fact that he has made a decision about the way that he wants it to work means that he'll probably stick with that until basically forever. So does that change with his back all the way up against the wall? I don't know. I really can't speculate. I would guess no, based on my knowledge of Craig and then based on, you know, what I know about Craig's you know, sort of neurodivergences and stuff. But ultimately, I don't know. I personally, I think it'd be a whole lot of fun to be like, watch some Satoshi coins move, just because I would love to watch everybody's brains pop on Twitter when this starts to happen. I mean, the panic would just be just delicious, frankly. And so, you know, I look at that and say, you know, maybe that's the game. Maybe that's the game that he has been playing, like this perfect poker face for, you know, since 2015 or 16 now. And, you know, he walks in with the like, here's my thumb drive, like somebody put Electrum on the computer and then bam. I don't know. I mean, that's the, like, if we're talking about like theatrical movie endings, like that's the really juicy theatrical movie ending. But I don't know. Like, again, Craig and I keep a very professional relationship. I don't blow up his DMs. I respect his space. I respect his decisions because I want to remain objective. I appreciate Craig for what he is, but I'm ultimately just another person in this economy who wants to make a difference the way I want to make it too. So I don't know. And we don't have to wait that long to find out. It's coming up soon. Next question. Do you think Craig leaving Enchain protects the patents from litigation fallout? If I had to guess, that's the reason why all of this happened. Makes a lot of sense. You move Craig out of the organization, you put him in his own, you know, LLC or whatever it is. You have him come back in as a consultant. And then if Craig loses, like what are you going to do? Like you can sue Craig, but Craig, you know, whatever. It's a nice legal way to put a wall there. So that would be my guess, but who knows? I don't know what the other internal conversations were. Who would win in a charity boxing match, CSW or Kristen Ager Hansen? Craig would. I don't know what. So first of all, Kristen is, I don't even know, 30, 40 pounds less than Craig. Like Kristen was a surprisingly small person from a stature standpoint. Like he's both kind of short and very trim, whereas Craig is both bigger in stature and he's quite a bit taller. But Craig, if you've ever like shook Craig's hand or like put your arm around Craig, like Craig is, he's a rock climber. So I don't know if anybody's ever seen Craig like do rock climbing or if you've ever known a rock climber, but the dude is solid. Like Craig is immensely strong. He's also obsessed with martial arts, been a martial artist his entire life. So, Mr. Moon, just bring up the other questions. If they're fun, whatever, if they're dramatic, whatever, let's take all the questions and then I will have a wrap up statement. Let's keep them going. Snektoshi Nakamoto, do you have any information or opinions about what's going on with the Satoshi Twitter account? So I know Andy casually, but I don't know if it's Andy operating the account right now. I think he was on a Spaces yesterday to kind of clarify. But the Satoshi account is like an ancient Twitter account, basically. It has been used by Craig in the past, I think. And then it got deleted and stuff. Like there's all kinds of stuff going on. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't gone in and clarified myself, so I don't know. It does sound like Craig, but I don't know. Did Craig reply to Calvin's email? No idea. Craig is similarly short in his responses, so I don't know. Next question. Tyrion, did Craig already talk about Nakamoto Industries? No. There was a UK filing in the last couple of days. Craig opened a couple new entities, and then there's been the stuff about like Stefan stepped down from the Craig Wright International one, which makes sense because if Stefan's going to be the new CEO of another organization and they're trying to make a little space between Craig and Enchain, they probably shouldn't share an executive, like, you know, that kind of thing. So it just kind of seems like, I don't know, it just seems pretty benign, actually. Next question. I think the last question here. Who will lead the Enchain ship now that the anchor is gone? Well, I don't know that Ager Hansen was necessarily the anchor, but, you know, I don't know. Stefan, who's another guy who I don't really know very well. I've known him casually for a few years. He's been on my show. I will shake his hand when I see him at conferences and stuff. But again, I don't know him well. I don't think he probably wants to be the CEO of Enchain for very long. There's an interesting poll that was going around. Like, should it be me, Brian Doherty, Zach Wiener, or Alex Agut? So it's just kind of pick CEOs from around the ecosystem. I think I got second place to Brian. I don't know. Honestly, it's not that hard to find a person who's a capable CEO. If I could give advice, and I probably shouldn't, but I would love to see someone who is from an organization that was good at sales-based growth. Like I think somebody that is a CEO who is good at selling things, especially at that level, like if they want to be the enterprise IBM version of whatever it is that they're trying to be, then well, you need somebody with experience doing that. You know, typically, like I'm trying to think back, like guys like David Washburn and Hakan and some of these other guys that were CEOs, like they were finance guys, like they weren't you know, lacking in capability necessarily, but if you're not going to take a Bitcoiner, which I don't know if you should have a Bitcoiner be the CEO of such an organization, like get somebody out there that's like going to bring in some sales. Like Kristen, to his credit, seemed like that was what he was good at, like having the Rolodex and pushing his way into your office and saying, hey, you should do business with us. So I don't know. I don't really have a whole lot of feedback on that. Enchain's a complicated company in many ways, but I wish him well. So I think that's it. As far as questions go, we are at about 81 minutes on the show. So I just want to thank everybody for watching. If you have been watching the whole time, I appreciate you. My voice is tired and it's starting to get a little warm in the office, even with the fan on. But yeah, I just want to say thanks. And ultimately, like, get back to work. Like, the drama cycle is juicy, but I promise you there's no money on the other end of just constant drama back and forth and crying about this and that. And he said, she said, and my feelings are hurt and I'm leaking emails and now we're in a tweet war. Like all of it is just kind of, you know, unprofessional, I guess. Like, I don't know. It's just the whole thing strikes me as, you know, you don't see this happening in AI. You certainly don't see it in like banking and finance. And it's just, it's immature. Like the blockchain economy as a whole is really, really immature. And I want the BSV economy to be as far away from it as possible. And then when it comes back to this and I've got, you know, guys like Peter McCormick and stuff like back to send me gifts, like their threats. I'm just like, how is this real life, man? Like I'm bald and you have gray hair and we're sending gifts of Samuel L. Jackson at each other. Like it's, you know, like it's cool. Knock it off, people. Go get a customer. If you get a customer, like you can come on my show and we'll talk about business, which is what I actually want to talk about. So, that and be good to each other. There's just not a reason to be this way, really, ever. I really, really, really dislike people who just want to stab each other in the back because it's bad business, bad for everybody. It is a net negative. The spillover benefits are nil. It sucks. Be good to each other. And then everything gets better. So that's it. I'm Kurt Wooker Jr. This has been a extra long CoinGeek Weekly live stream. You can see us again on Tuesday at 2 next week, where I will probably not be wearing a suit jacket because it's too warm. So thanks, Alex, and thanks for everybody else who is watching. And again, like, subscribe, hit the alert bell, all that stuff. And I appreciate you. I will see you next week. Goodbye.
All the Bitcoin variants, they're not as much on the high horse anymore as they used to be because, you know, they have their own problems to deal with. And so yes. people are quite open to say, you know what, in the end, this is just technology. It's not about religion. It's not about, you know, some sort of infighting or anything. It's just like, who can actually provide utility and where can I put my use case on?
I had made my mind up, years previous that this chap, Dr. Wright, is the inventor of Bitcoin. So I didn't really waste my time with the crowd that were somehow rebelling against him. It almost felt like they were rebelling against their own father or something like that. You know, just like that was their mindset. They didn't like the authority figure.
This is buybsv.com, the quick and simple way to buy Bitcoin SV. You can't miss it. It says a quick and simple way to buy BSV on buybsv.com. It's safe and secure. Within an hour, you'll own BSV digital assets, which means it's so quick and simple. So if you want to buy BSV, use buybsv.com. It does exactly what it says.